Welcome to A Well Cared For Human, the podcast that tries to convince you that you are 100% normal and an even better than okay example of the human species, despite the fact that sometimes we feel like the craziest, most incapable, or worthless creatures on the face of this planet. I'm Corey, an author, a creative, and the host of the show. Whatever you're bringing to the table today, I hope this episode proves to be a dose of inspiration for you on your quest to become a well-cared-for human. You can find the episode show notes, your free wellness blueprint, and more at awellcaredforhuman.com. And as always, thank you for listening. Hello, humans. It's your host, Corey, and today we're going to talk about pillar breakers. And to be a little bit more specific, this is in the context of the well-cared-for-human model being four pillars. So if you have been following the show, you probably know that I talk about wellness in terms of the four aspects of your relationship with yourself. So it isn't just that we need to have a great relationship with our body, that being the way we take care of our body, sleep, nutrition, exercise, but we also need to have a relationship with the other three aspects of our well-being, which is our mind and emotions. So for the mind-emotions pillar, that's one. With the spirit pillar, that's our creativity, our joy, our connection to meaningful work, the purpose of our life, whatever we deem that purpose to be. And then connection, our willingness to be open with others, to be vulnerable with others. How safe do we feel to be out there with other people, being our true selves? What does a healthy relationship look like with other people? So that's the quick reminder of the four pillars, those four aspects of yourself. And then I talk about how we can build those pillars up in many different ways. And so all of these different episodes that we've been doing, 100 plus episodes now, I talk about different ways to invest in each of those pillars, how to build that relationship with your body, how to build that relationship with your mind and emotions, how to build that relationship with your spirit, your creativity, your joy, your play, your purpose, how to build that relationship with connection, with vulnerability. But I haven't really spoken a lot specifically about three aspects that really undermine that work. And a big one of those is negativity. So there are a lot of different ways a person can be negative. And there's this misconception that some people are just more negative than others, that maybe they're born more negative, they're born more pessimistic, that optimism is a trait that others have. But I actually would like to argue that the negativity that we have is a habit. It's a muscle that we've built. A good example of that is my particular brand of negativity, which is hypervigilance. So because of my trauma background, because of everything that I suffered with my family, which I have spoken in depth of on the Who Killed My Mother podcast and also in this show, everything that went on created in me a sense of hypervigilance. And if you've never heard of this term, hypervigilance is when you lose the ability to relax. Essentially, you forget how to relax. You're always scanning the environment for something to be wrong, for something that needs to be fixed. You're hyper aware of what's going on around you just in case something changes. And I've spoken a bit about this before in this context that in order to keep myself safe as a kid, I needed to be very attuned to the atmosphere around me, to the emotions of others, to anything that could go the wrong way, so to speak. And so me always scanning the environment for things that could go wrong, that was just my way of keeping myself safe. And that was the imperative as little Corey, as a kid, was to keep myself safe by keeping a really close read on the situation at all times. And so that developed into a habit, even more than a habit, probably. Habit is not a strong enough word to convey this, more like a compulsion or an impulse, something that was driving me because the need to feel safe, especially in kids, is very high. And so I was relying on this hypervigilance to keep me safe. And so when I became an adult and I got away from my family, that hypervigilance stayed because I had already developed it so strongly at that point. I had been doing it for decades, keeping myself safe in these ways. And so if you look at hypervigilance as something that's overly focused on problems, for example, then that makes it really clear as to why I would have this negative mindset, because I'm always looking for what's wrong. I'm always looking for what might happen. I'm imagining the worst case scenarios rather than the best outcomes, the best scenarios. And so it took me a long time to realize that A, that's what I was doing, B, why I was doing it, and then C, how to adjust that habit, not just so that I could relax, which I absolutely needed because I was exhausted, but also just relax, because there's a lot of research that shows that positivity, that optimism, actually gets us better results than hypervigilance. As a kid, I had no choice. I absolutely needed to be hypervigilant to be safe. But as an adult, I have a choice to choose optimism over negativity. And so one of the things that was breaking down my pillars, that was rendering them useless, essentially, was this negativity that was coming from my trauma experiences. And there are different kinds of negativity. There's negative thoughts. So that is imagining the worst case scenario. That is dwelling on something terrible that happened. That could be also narratives that I'm telling myself. So for example, if one of the many abusive things that my father had said was really stuck with me, replaying that in my mind, holding on to that as an example or proof that I'm just not good enough. Because he was very keen on making me feel less than growing up. And so because I didn't feel particularly worthy growing up, I might be scanning my environment looking for things that prove that prove my unworthiness. And we all do this. We have stories that we make up in our minds about ourselves, and then we look around the environment for confirmation of this, even though it may not be true. And so that's the different ways that negative thoughts can be holding us back. Also just tanking my mood when I'm really dwelling in a negative space, when I'm really going over and over something, or I'm too focused on what could go wrong rather than what could be right. My mood just really tanks. I just don't feel that I'm in control of the situation. I don't have a positive outlook. I don't feel particularly empowered. I feel held back and exhausted. I mean, I think that working with negativity is really exhausting, personally. Negativity wears me out. And fortunately, I'm not the kind of person that necessarily sheds that negativity onto other people, which is good. I'm glad that I don't dump my negativity on others, but I'm dumping it on myself quite a bit. So that's still sad that I need to continue to work on this, that it's probably going to be a lifelong process of catching myself when I'm being too negative internally and then adjusting that accordingly with some positivity. I have a friend, for example, who he is very negative. I joke in my mind that he's Eeyore. So I call him Eeyore in my mind, because anytime we have a conversation, he's basically just talking about how terrible his life is, even though there's nothing really bad going on and that he could absolutely change it however he wanted to. He has the money and the time and the resources to do this. He just doesn't, because he's so stuck in that negative cycle. And I love him, so I listen to him and I don't judge it. But it's funny how negativity will do that to us. It will rob us of our joy, of our happiness, of being present in the moment. And so how is this a pillar breaker? Negative thoughts. I talk about this a bit in the self-care, self-punishment episode. You can go back and listen to how we can turn something as great as taking care of ourselves into self-punishment by really beating ourselves up. But essentially, in order to make changes or in order to make progress, to invest in something, you have to have a certain level of belief that it will work. So for example, let's say that you want to make changes with your relationship with your body. Let's say you want to break your screen time addiction. That's one that I feel like I'm always working on. I keep telling myself I'm going to stop bringing my phone to bed, and then I won't for a while, and then it will creep back in and I'll find that I'm bringing it to bed again. So I'm still working on that one, but maybe it's not a phone screen addiction issue for you. Maybe it's you want to get more exercise. Maybe you feel like you're too sedentary, or maybe you want to eat better. Maybe you feel like you're eating too much junk food and it's affecting your moods. Whatever it is, you just want to build a better relationship with your body. And so you go about doing that. You go about making these changes. But if you're doing that to this soundtrack in your mind, if there's just a voice running in your mind about how it's never going to work and you're wasting your time and this is useless and it's not going to fix anything and you're not going to feel any better, and it's really hard to keep up the motivation, it's really hard to keep up the momentum, to keep investing in that habit, to keep strengthening that aspect of your relationship with yourself, if there's just someone in the background essentially heckling you, even though the person in the background heckling you is you, essentially. It's really difficult to get your mind in the right mindset, so to speak, to make those changes and to get them to stick. That's really the big thing. Most of us can do changes for a few days, but we have to be able to invest in it long enough that it really sticks, for it to become second nature. And I think that that's where negativity really messes things up for us, because it makes it almost impossible for the good habit to stick, I don't know, maybe it's like cooking with a nonstick pan or something, like a Teflon pan. It just, if there's all that negativity coating everything, it doesn't become habitual enough. It doesn't become ingrained enough to really turn into that great long-lasting habit that we can just do automatically without thinking. So negative thoughts, I think, really cause quite a bit of detriment to us in that way. Same for negative speech. For a long time, I had a really bad habit of speaking poorly about myself. Anytime anyone would compliment me or they would say something nice or kind, immediately I was like, oh no, not at all. You're absolutely wrong about that. Like if they complimented my appearance, I would immediately criticize my appearance. If they complimented a book that they had read, I would immediately talk about how that was actually the worst book ever written in the history of mankind. So I just spoke very ill of myself often. And it wasn't always in response to compliments either. Sometimes I would just talk trash about myself in passing in conversation. And so that was a really bad habit that I needed to break because that was undermining everything as well. If you're trying to have a great relationship with yourself, but you're always speaking poorly of yourself, you know, that really undermines it. Just like in real life, if you had a friend who was always being really mean to you, really critical, really judgmental, if they were always cutting you down, you wouldn't have a great relationship with that person. You wouldn't feel especially loved or appreciated by that person. You certainly wouldn't feel that warmth, that affection, that friendliness, which is the whole part that we're trying to achieve with having this great relationship with ourselves. And so it's the same for us. Even when we're the ones that are saying all these things, it still affects that relationship. It still undermines that sense of wellness, that sense of well-being. And so addressing that negativity in order to strengthen those pillars and strengthen that relationship with ourselves is really essential. So in addition to the negative thoughts and the negative speech, I just touched on this, but the idea of there's also those negative narratives that might be running. And so if you're telling yourself a lot of stories about yourself and they're not very nice stories, like I always get it wrong, I'm never going to be enough, no one's ever going to love me, no one's ever going to appreciate me, I always mess things up, there's something fundamentally wrong with me. I think that's one that I carried for a really long time, that there was something essentially wrong with me. And of course, I know where that negative self-talk was coming from. Of course, hashtag daddy issues. I had these issues with my father's mental and emotional abuse. And so I carried that feeling of there's something wrong with me well into adulthood and well into this time in my life where I'm starting to change my habits. I'm starting to invest in my pillars. For the body, it was the martial arts and the yoga. For the mind and emotions, it was meditation, mindfulness. It was therapy, journaling, affirmations, getting to know my mind, getting to know my feelings. For the spirit, it was my creativity, learning how valuable it was for me to tell my stories, to express myself in that way. Creativity as a stabilizing, as a healing force. And then connection, learning the kind of people that I wanted in my life, people who would make me feel safe and secure and loved, who didn't tear me down physically or verbally. So I was doing those actions, but it didn't feel like it was amounting to anything because there was so much of this negativity present. And there was this just pervasive feeling that something was wrong with me. So even though I was going through the motions and I was doing these actions and I was seeing a bit of progress, there was still this atmosphere of something is wrong with me, that I have to do all these things because there's something wrong with who I am fundamentally. So it didn't feel particularly loving, all this self-care. It didn't feel particularly kind investing in myself in this way because again, it was just this atmosphere of negativity. And so as long as that negativity is present, it undermines all the investment that we do in the pillars. So it has to be thought, speech, and action all together to build those pillars. We have to be thinking positively about ourselves. We have to be speaking positively about ourselves. And we have to really focus on unraveling and debunking any of those negative narratives that we might have inherited from previous experiences or from abusers, or they come to us in all sorts of ways. I can't begin to guess all the ways that we acquire negative narratives. I feel like society also just kind of sells us some. And so whatever has happened that's made you acquire some negative narratives, identifying those and then working to unravel them, that's what will make sure that we're not the ones inflicting damage on the pillars anymore. Because yes, I had abusers and I had terrible experiences and that broke my pillars, that broke my relationship with myself. But there comes a point when you move beyond that, when you escape the grasp of the people trying to hurt you, and you want to make sure that you don't continue that legacy. That you're not now the one who's dealing the blows to yourself. And it can be really difficult to shift that, but we can shift it by treating optimism and courage and trust as habits. And that's essentially what I do, which is that when I catch myself being too negative, when I feel that the negativity is creeping in, and let's be honest, there's so many things happening in the world that stokes that negativity. I think that that's probably why, unlike some of this other personal work I've done where I did it and then it was resolved and it didn't come back, thank goodness. Negativity is a tough one because with negativity, I feel that it's often fanned, it's often fed by the world, especially by media. You know, I'll get on my phone and maybe I'll check the news and I can't spend more than 2 minutes looking at a news article without really beginning to think, wow, the world is a terrible place. And so that negativity cycle is immediately being triggered. It's being enforced by these external narratives from the world. So it's not even just my own self-work, my own trauma to work through. The negativity is coming at us from other directions. And it could be people like my friend that they have a really negative way of seeing the world and that rubs off on us, that brings us down. Or it could be social media. So sometimes when I get on social media and maybe there's a really negative comment section that I find myself lost in. I know I should not be looking at the comment section on social media, but sometimes I do. Actually, often I do. I go straight to the comments to see what people say, but sometimes that is clearly a very bad mistake, and there's a lot of negativity there, and I feel that shift my perspective altogether. And so unfortunately, negativity might just be one of those things that we always need to be aware of, that we always need to mitigate. But we can do that absolutely by practicing optimism as a habit, by saying that, yes, negativity has cropped up. I feel it in myself, or I'm hearing it in my thoughts or in my speech, but I'm going to use optimism now. I'm going to treat it like a muscle. I'm going to treat it like a habit, and I'm going to break this spell or this hold that negativity has on me in order to shift myself back to a more balanced place. And how we practice optimism as a muscle, this is a good place where affirmations might work. That was one of the first ways that I started using optimism as a muscle, was through affirmations. I think I might have actually mentioned this in the affirmations episode. That's really early in the show. I think it might be like the second or third episode ever. But in that episode, I'm pretty sure I talk about how when I first started affirmations, I didn't know what they were for. I just did not understand the concept of how I was supposed to look in the mirror and say nice things about myself, and how that was going to fix any of my mental baggage or my trauma. I was just like, this is not enough. This is like putting duct tape over, I don't know, a dam that's about to break. It just didn't make any sense. Even though duct tape is really strong, this was not going to cut it. But then I realized that the problem with negativity is that, yeah, maybe you can stop yourself from being negative for a few minutes, but then you don't really know what to say instead. So let's say you catch yourself being really mean and critical to yourself. Well, then what do you say to yourself instead of that? Because you'll feel this kind of gap, this sort of phantom ache to do something or say something. And so if you have a positive affirmation, maybe something that you've written that you want to be true or you want to replace that negative thought with, it's just helpful to have that on hand to use that instead. So I have used affirmations in that way, which is where I just have a few that I've written out or that I kind of have memorized in the back of my mind. And so when I catch myself being negative, I just counter that with something. So let's say I spent too much time on the news, for example, and I'm feeling really negative about the state of the world. I might have something more optimistic to say to myself, like, slowly but surely, things are getting better. Slowly but surely, things will turn around. And depending on the day is how well I believe that. And you can always come up with better affirmations than the one I'm saying to you, something that feels true to you, but just having something on hand that you can say. And then again, instead of being hypervigilant like I was, where I'm always looking for problems, training yourself to look for the good things. I always love this story about Mr. Rogers, if there's any Mr. Rogers fans here, where he tells a story about how he had seen something terrible on TV when he was a kid. I don't remember what it was. Let's pretend it was like a bombing or something. But he had seen something terrible and it really scared him. And his mom had said, look at all the helpers. Like, look for all the helpers that are there. And he said it was really integral to shifting his perspective so that he wasn't looking at this horrible tragedy and just seeing everything that was wrong. He looked at it and he saw all the people that were rushing in to help, that were rushing in to make things better. So we can also train ourselves to not just look at the horrors of the day, or what's happening, we could say, ah, look, here are all these people here that are trying to do good. Here are all these people who are trying to make things better. Here are these people that are risking their lives for something beautiful that they believe in. So we can train that eye to be more optimistic as well. So this is just an invitation to think about maybe the things you might be doing, either your thoughts, your speech, your narratives that might be breaking your pillars, that might be impacting how successful your self-work is. And if you do feel like that negativity is negatively impacting you, then know that optimism is a muscle and you can make it as strong as you need to in order to help you balance that negativity out. And it's true that we may continually see things that trigger that negativity, but it's equally true that we can always activate that muscle to push back against that and to bring things back into balance. It's just about practice and about making it the default to be optimistic rather than the default to be negative. And the best part is that all of this is absolutely in our hands. And that's it for today, dear humans. I hope you found this episode useful. And if you did, please write into the show to let me know what you think or to ask me a question about something that you're dealing with. I always love to hear from you guys through any of my social media or through email, Corey@CoreyMShrum.com. Otherwise, I will be back next week with a new episode of A Well Cared For Human. And until then, please take good care of you. This episode of A Well Cared For Human was written and produced by me, Corey Marie. The music was by Late Night Feeler and Esther Abrami. If you like what I'm doing here, please consider visiting my Patreon. For as little as $1 a month, you get early ad-free access to the episodes, as well as a monthly patrons-only Q&A, bonus videos, and more. Not to mention that your Patreon support lets me know that you find value in the show and want it to continue. You can find me on Patreon by visiting www.patreon.com/Corey Marie. If you can't support the show financially, that is okay. You can still subscribe to the show, leave a review of the show, and recommend the show to your friends, not just the neurotic ones. All of this helps so much. And as always, thank you for listening.